about heroes. And it's like one of the greatest Christmas gifts I ever got. And so today, we're going to talk about heroes and what makes a hero. All the movies, if you guys go to movies or pay attention, all the movies out today are about one of two things. They're either about superheroes or aliens. And so we're going to talk about one of those today. We're going to talk about superheroes. We want superheroes. We need superheroes. We crave superheroes. Of the 100 top money-making movies of all time, 20 of them have been direct superhero movies, including 5 Spider-Man, 3 Batman, 2 Iron Man, and 2 Captain Americas. Now, if you add in movies like Star Wars and Guardians of the Galaxy and The Lion King, who all have heroes in them, the number jumps to 50. 50 out of the 100 highest-grossing movies of all time involve superheroes of some kind. People want heroes. By the way, the top money-making R-rated movie of all time is still The Passion of the Christ. I could still see, these guys were my heroes growing up. I could still see growing up, we didn't have like, you young kids today, you could just put whatever you want on your walls. We had Sports Illustrated and we had a magazine called Sport. I don't know if how many of you guys remember Sport, but they used to rival each other. And each issue would have a full-page ad of posters you could order of athletes. And so I could still see on my wall, I had Jerry West over here on this wall, and they were 2-foot by 3-foot posters. And it's the picture of West that's still used for the NBA logo today. On another wall, I had Wilt Chamberlain, who played for the Lakers, and Merlin Olsen, who played for the Rams. I don't know why I was a big Los Angeles fan at the time, but everything came from L.A., and I can still see these posters. Wilt Chamberlain is dunking in a game. He's still wearing his Laker yellow uniform. Merlin Olsen's bursting through the offensive line to get to the quarterback. These posters turned into Pete Rose and Joe Morgan and Johnny Bench. And then when they finally added tennis posters, Stan Smith, who most of you guys probably never heard of, and then a runner named Jim Ryan, who was actually about my age at the time. Jim Ryan was actually voted the high school athlete of the century by Sports Illustrated over people like Michael Jordan. But here's the thing about heroes. Heroes are temporary. Things happen to our heroes. Pete Rose is still not allowed in the Hall of Fame. Jim Ryan fell in his warm-up heat at the Olympics and never got to show the world how great he was. Stan Smith would never win another major title. Wilt Chamberlain and Merlin Olsen are deceased. I remember one athlete I really looked up to. His name was Lance Renzel. Most of you guys probably never heard of Lance Renzel. I knew you knew, Mike. Played for the Dallas Cowboys and then got traded to the Rams. Lance Renzel had it all. He was married to Joey Hetherington, who was at the time one of the most popular and famous starlets in Hollywood. He was rich, he was famous, he had it all going on. And then one day, he wrote a book. It was called When All the Laughter Died in Sorrow. Lance Renzel had a problem. He would expose himself to young ladies, and he lost it all. His marriage fell apart. His contract with the NFL was taken away. He lost everything. This is what happens with our heroes. They fall. Muhammad Ali could barely put 2 sentences together at the end of his life. Mike Webster, who's maybe the best center that ever played in the NFL, he won 4 Super Bowls with the Pittsburgh Steelers. He died penniless. At the end of his life, he was so confused that if he would go out for a drive, he would end up sleeping in his car because he couldn't find his way back home. Didn't remember where he lived. One day, our heroes are tough, unbeatable, on top of the world. And overnight, and you young people are going to learn this, they simply fade away. Bill Russell won more NBA championships than Michael Jordan and LeBron James combined. Half the people in this room have no idea who Bill Russell is. No one buys Peyton Manning jerseys anymore. Michael Jackson is all but a faded memory. Anybody in here ever hear of a guy named Bob McAdoo? I knew you would, Mike. Bob McAdoo won 5 NBA championships, more than LeBron. Nobody knows who he is. Once these guys retire, they become nobodies, just like the rest of us. And we all have the same fate that awaits us, the grave. There's a guy named KB, a Christian hip-hop artist. And he wrote this in one of his songs. You make a song about Jesus, and you're never going to hell. That's written in the first book of, where was it? Nowhere. Trip Lee, another Christian rapper, wrote, hey, if you're looking for a superstar, I'm not the one you're searching for. I came to bring some worship, bro. He's perfect. I'm just dirt below. Hey, if you're looking for a superstar, don't look at me. You got me wrong. I've been a sinner all along. Look to him and not my songs. That's a long lead-in, I know. And what does this have to do with anything? And the answer is everything. Now listen, I know it's not cool for Jesus to be our superhero. It's not cool. It's Jesus. Wasn't he just some opinionated bigot who went around telling people that he was the only way to heaven? I mean, how egotistical do you have to be? He's just some guy that lived a couple thousand years ago. What does he have to do with my life? Our life. Besides, who wants some guy hanging dead on a cross as their hero? Doesn't look good. Give me a guy who averages 30 points a night. Now that's a hero. Or a woman who won 4 Grammys. Now that's somebody you can really look up to. But Jesus? Come on, man. On the last night of his life, when he could have been making an exit strategy, instead, he decided it'd be a better use of his time to get down on his knees and wash the feet of all his disciples, wash all their dirty feet. John 13, 4 and 5. So he got up from the table, took off his robe, wrapped a towel around his waist, and poured water into a basin. This is all planned by Jesus. This wasn't a spur-of-the-moment thing. Then he began to wash the disciples' feet, drying them with the towel he had around him. Here's our hero, down on the ground, washing dirty feet. It didn't get any better from there. Right after this, Jesus went into the Garden of Gethsemane. He went there to beg his dad to get out of this. He's in the garden, and we've talked about this before. It's not like the pictures we see. He's in agony. Matthew 26, 39, part A. And going a little further, he fell on his face and prayed, saying, my Father, if it's possible, let this cup pass from me. And he's got great drops of blood. His capillaries are bursting, and he's so scared. Here's our hero, trying to get out of his calling. As far as heroes go, it goes from bad to worse. You would at least think that our hero would fight for himself. They'd stand up for himself. Matthew 26, 51 and 52a. And behold, one of those who were with Jesus stretched out his hand and drew his sword and struck the servant of the high priest and cut off his ear. Then Jesus said to him, put your sword back in its place. Here's our hero. No resistance, no fighting, no taking a stand for himself. Not only that, he rebuked the one person who was ready to fight for him. What kind of hero is this? So the soldiers draw their swords, and they step in to arrest him. And then, just for a moment, our hero shows up. John 18, 6. When he told them, I am he, they came to the garden. Jesus says, who are you looking for? And they say, we're looking for Jesus. And Jesus told them, I am he. When I told him, I am he actually said, I am. They stepped back and fell to the ground. He said one thing, I am. That's all he said. And all these men fall down to the ground, prostrate before Jesus, and here's Jesus standing up in front of them, looking over this army of guys. The religious leaders and the Roman soldiers were all there. The Greek word used for the soldiers in John 18:3 is spera. It indicated a group of 1,000 highly trained Roman soldiers, plus 240 cavalry members, plus around 760 infantrymen. That's over 2,000 people when you add in the religious leaders. Rome would have these garrisons stationed all over their territory. The reason for that was so that if an uprising broke out over here, they could immediately come and put down the uprising. And so these people were ready to go at a moment's notice. And the religious leaders came and they got these guys, they got permission, and they come to arrest Jesus. They obviously expected a fight. We got 2,000 guys that came to arrest one man. All Jesus did was acknowledge that he was the one they were looking for, and they fell down and flopped on the earth like fish out of water. Note who's in charge here. It's our hero, Jesus. And keep that in mind as we go along. He then commands the Romans to let his disciples go. Jesus is calling the shots. Pastor Adam Clark said this about this event right here. Jesus spoke with authority. It wasn't a request, it was a demand. At your peril, injure them, talking about his disciples. Let them go about their business. I have already given you sufficient proof of my power. I will not exert it in my own behalf, for I will lay down my life for my sheep. But I will not permit you to injure the least of these. Here's Jesus, our hero, protecting his sheep. Here I'd like to add what Jesus said next, because we often take it out of context here. John 18:9, after Jesus tells them, let these guys go. This was to fulfill the word which he had spoken. Of those whom you gave me, I have lost not one. Remember the context. What's going on? Jesus is in the garden with his disciples and they come to arrest him. This, we take this verse out of context all the time. Who's Jesus talking about here? Of those you've given me, I've lost none. He's talking about you? Me? Not in this verse. He's talking only about his disciples in this verse. As we continue, keep this in mind. Jesus could have stopped what's about to happen anytime he wanted to. Jesus is kicked in the back of the knees. You ever been kicked in the back of the knees? It immediately forces you to the ground. They grab his hands and they pull him behind his back. And they tie his hands back here really tight. There's no evidence in the Bible that through the trials that he's about to go through, that these cords were ever loosened. So this is the first agony that Jesus is enduring. He shuffled from one ruler to the next, from Annas to Caiaphas, Pilate, Herod. They're all taking their shots. They all want him dead, but nobody has the courage to pronounce the death sentence. They were all cowards, right up to the very end. They were passing the torch. It's like, hey, we need this guy dead, so how about if you do it? This is what they were doing. Jesus is stripped and laid against the post. His hands are tied out in front of him, and he's against the post on his knees. And they had two guys with whips on either side. We've talked about this before. They're two floggers. The whips had leather strands on the end, okay, leather strips. And each of these had lead balls or fish hooks or little metal hooks on the end of them. And so the first guy would bring that down across the back of Jesus. And when he pulled it back, the metal balls would leave deep bruising on the skin of Jesus. And the hooks would dig into the flesh on his back and tear out chunks of flesh. And then when he pulled his back, the guy on this side would throw his whip across the back of Jesus. And it would wrap around the front. And it would start tearing out the flesh and the muscle here. So now Jesus is being torn apart from the front and the back. And this flogging continues. Back and forth they go. Eventually, they'd stop. And it wasn't out of mercy for Jesus. It was because if the prisoner died, then the flogger had to take the place of the prisoner. He wasn't supposed to die there. They weren't done with their sport yet. Blood is covering the bystanders and gathering in great pools on the ground below Jesus. After they were done flogging him, as his blood began to dry and to clot, they put a robe on him so that they can mock him. And then they started beating him with their fists. And then they started mocking him. Hail, King of the Jews! Tell us which one of us it is that hit you. Unfortunately for them, he knew. They tore his beard out with his hands. Guys, if you ever try to shave without hot water or shaving cream, girls, if you've ever had wax, then you get a small idea of what this is like, the pain that's involved. They twisted a crown of long, sharp thorns and they put it on his head. They pierced his skull. They're mocking him again. His friends have deserted him. The people that just a couple days before were hailing him as the conquering hero are now yelling, "Crucify him! Crucify him!" Thousands of people. It was Thursday, the 14th of Nisan, and the lamb was about to be slaughtered. Listen, it had to be Thursday, and it had to be the 14th. If it wasn't, Jesus isn't the Messiah. He had to die on the 14th. Had to. They tore the robe from Jesus, which opened up all the wounds that had started to clot, inflicting more pain on our hero. They put a cross beam across his shoulders and he made him start walking. He's carrying this, it's not like what we carried through town the other day, nice smooth pieces of wood. It's a rough piece of wood and it's strung across Jesus' shoulders. And the splinters are digging into his back that has very little skin and muscle left on it. The nerves are screaming. At one point, he can't take it anymore. He falls to the ground, and another is asked to carry his cross. At last, they reach the point of crucifixion. See, the upright was permanently in the ground. All they carried was the cross beam, despite the pictures you see. These things were heavy. No healthy person could carry this, a whole cross. And Jesus is beat nearly to death. There's no way he's carrying this. So they throw Jesus to the ground with his crossbeam behind him, and they grab one of his hands and they stretch it out, and they grab a nail, and they pound it right here through the wrist. And when you hit this, what we call the funny bone, that nerve goes right down here, and that's what they pounded that nail through. And pain screamed through Jesus' body. And then they grabbed his other hand and they pulled it out over here and they pounded another nail right here. And now Jesus is affixed to the crossbeam. And they pick him up, and he's hanging here by his hands. And they put him in the notch that's carved out in the upright. And then they take his feet, and they place them on top of each other. And they bend the knees slightly. And they didn't do any of this for mercy, by the way. They did this to prolong the agony of the person on the cross, the person being crucified. And they pounded a nail through both of those feet. And now Jesus is affixed to the cross. The reason they did this with the feet is because if they just left you hanging there by your hands, you would suffocate in a very short time, minutes. But sometimes these guys would last days on the cross. And what they would have to do is they get to the point they couldn't breathe, and so they'd have to push themselves up on that nail holding their feet in and take a breath and then come back down. This is what Jesus is going through. The pain is beyond human understanding. Jesus is dying from thirst, from heart failure, from shock, from blood loss, all at the same time. And there he is, the real superhero, dying on a tree with his guts literally hanging out. His eyes are swollen shut. Not even willing to fight for himself. Man, what kind of hero is that? We want a hero that's going to come flying in at the last minute to save the day. A guy who's going to show the world who's who, who's the boss, and what's what. Be patient, because he's on his way. There's an awesome scene in Lord of the Rings. We've talked about this before. How many of you guys have seen Lord of the Rings? There's an awesome scene in part two. J.R.R. Tolkien was a Christian, and Lord of the Rings is based loosely on the book of Revelation. And there's a scene in the movie where it's all dark, and like, here's the mountain fortress, and all the good guys are up here, and they're gathered, and all the hobbits and everybody are that are left are up here gathered in this fort. And then down here, all around, as far as you can see, are all the enemy forces. And the scene is filmed in grays and browns. There's no color in the scene. It's dark and it's dreary. And the enemies breach the defenses of the good guys, and they start coming up over the walls. And just when all hope is lost, a blinding white light pierces the darkness. And the scene shifts, and there's Gandalf riding on a white horse, glowing white. And the enemies begin to scatter. He took this from a verse in Revelation. This is where Tolkien got the idea, Revelation 19:11. Then I saw heaven opened, and behold, a white horse. The one sitting on it is called Faithful and True, and in righteousness he judges and makes war. Listen, this is Jesus coming back the next time. Babylon has been destroyed. The world systems have been destroyed, the world religious systems, financial systems. But Antichrist still has his armies, and they're gathered together to make war against Israel. Because if they can destroy Israel, that prevents God's plan from being fulfilled and Christ coming back. So here they are, it's a dark and dreary scene. This is what's going to happen very shortly. We're on the cusp of this happening. And here's all the enemies of Israel, and they're going to be gathered around God's people. And then, a blinding white light is going to pierce the darkness. And a horse on a rider is going to appear. He's alive, and he's about to save the day. He's about to come riding in, punishing evil, and to show the world who's boss. Listen, Jesus is no lamb being led to the slaughter this time. This time when Jesus comes back, they're not going to nail him to a tree. He's going to set the record straight. This time, every knee of every creature is going to drop down before Christ the Lord, just like those Roman soldiers did in the Garden of Gethsemane. When we behold his power, Revelation 19:12, his eyes are a flame like blazing fire, and on his head are many crowns. He has a name written on him that no one knows but he himself. Charles Spurgeon on why his eyes are a flame of fire. Why are they like flames of fire? To discern the secrets of all hearts. There are no secrets here that Christ does not see. There is no lewd thought. There is no unbelieving skepticism that Christ does not read. There is no hypocrisy, no formalism, no deceit that is hidden from his eyes. He no longer wears a crown of thorns. He wears a victor's crown, a crown of a conquering king. Revelation 19:13b, and his name is the Word of God. John 1:1, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And here he comes back. And this time when he comes back, he's coming as the conquering hero. Revelation 19:15, from his mouth came a sharp sword to strike down the nations. He will rule them with an iron rod. He will release the fierce wrath of God the Almighty like juice flowing from a wine press. No more excuses. No more, oh, I didn't know that, God. Ephesians 6:17b tells us what this is, what the sword is. The sword is the Word of God. But I didn't know that I shouldn't be doing that, God. It is written, he will thunder. That's what the sharp two-edged sword coming out of Jesus' mouth is. That's all he's going to say. It is written. You have no excuse. You were given every opportunity and every chance, and you said no to me. And he, Jesus, will rule with absolute authority. He's coming with all the fury of the wrath of God. And no one's going to stand against him ever again. Listen, at that point, our hero has returned. Not some wimp to be pushed around by the world. That's not what it's going to be like next time, guys. He's not going to be blasphemed, mocked, ridiculed, punched, or spit upon. This time he's coming as a warrior to destroy all the enemies of God. He's coming back to take his throne, his rightful place. KJ52, another Christian hip-hop artist, he wrote a song called Superheroes. You are holy and true. That's the Justice League. All I need is faith like a mustard seed. Now check the sky, it ain't no bird or plane. It's the God man. It ain't no Lois Lane. You need to know this, family, just why he came. Because you can know his plan and you can know his name. You see, I'm not the same since I got Christ. Right off the bat, man, I was in a dark night. But you're the great I am. Plus, you're the super friend. You take my junk, give me life, and help me break the trend. You made me right, give a sight, help us to comprehend. You took my sin, X'd it out, the real X-Men. The Bible calls this the terrible day of the Lord. But listen, it doesn't have to be terrible for you. There's still time. You can join the X-Men, X-Sinners. You can still join. You can turn your sins over to Christ. You can let him be the Lord of your life. You can have eternal life. You can escape the punishment to come. You see, our hero, he couldn't fight for himself in the Garden of the Gethsemane. Because if he did, he couldn't have fought for us. He didn't die as a defeated man. When he hung on that tree, he was in full control of the situation. He died as our superhero. He died doing things his way. And upon his soon return, the whole world's going to understand that. Maybe we're afraid to tell the world that Jesus is our hero because we still see him brutalized and hanging on that tree, weak and defeated. Maybe we're ashamed of him or embarrassed by him. We need to see him as he really is. Luke 9:26. For whoever is ashamed of me and my words, the Son of Man will be ashamed of him when he comes in his glory. This is a two-way street. If you're embarrassed to say that Christ is your hero, to say that Christ is the one that you follow, when it comes time for your judgment before God, God's going to say the same thing about you. That's what it says. We need to see him as he really is, guys. The Christ, the King, the Conqueror. He's coming soon. He's the real superhero. I love you guys.
Please rise. Turn in your hymnals to number 621.